Blog Talk Radio.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, August 13th, 2014. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. Chet, it's going to be a tough follow-up on our great show last week with Arkansas Fred Barnett, but we will give it a try.
You got that right, Bill. Fred was terrific, and he seemed to have a good time and even hinted that he'd like to make another visit to our rapid-fire hot seat, I hope so. But for sure, a tough act to follow this week.
I really enjoyed having Fred. I thought the more we talked to him, the looser he got, the more fun he was having. And, you know, as you mentioned, he said he'd like to come back, and I sure want to make that happen. So we'll wait till later in the season, and we will get Fred back on. We do have some things to talk about tonight regarding the opening preseason game against the Bears. There were some goods, there were some bads, and there were some uglies. We'll talk a little bit about Alumni Day at Franklin Field, and hopefully some of our listeners that attended that will have a chance to give us a call and give us a little insight on that. It looked like by all the accounts, posts, and things you could see, and pictures, that it was a really great day with both the alumni and the present-day players, you know, really being friendly with the crowd and putting on a good show. So we'll talk some about that. And, of course, the Birds are practicing against the Patriots this week, getting ready for the Friday night game in Foxborough. Along with that, we'll talk a little bit about your woeful Phillies, Chet, and rumors of a blockbuster trade floating around with the Red Sox that include Cole Hamels headed to Boston, and we'll talk a little bit about Jimmy Rollins as well.
Yeah, the Philly season is winding down mercifully, but there's still lots to discuss there for sure. Well, the Birds are just getting started, and there's certainly plenty to talk about regarding Chip Kelly's guys in Midnight Green, so we'll certainly touch all the bases tonight.
Before we get started, I would like to ask you, I know last Friday night when we talked last, you were headed to the Phillies game to see the Phils and the Mets, and it was Roy Halladay bobblehead night. I wanted to know how that went, and I saw Roy was in the booth with the guys later on, and boy, what a humble, mild-mannered guy he is. How was it down there?
Yeah, well, being there, I didn't get to hear him in the booth, but yeah, he was there. He threw out the first pitch. He spoke to the crowd for about 45 seconds, saying how much he really enjoyed his time in Philadelphia. Still looked like he's in great shape, obviously, just a year removed from the game. But they had a pretty decent crowd, 32,000-plus. Of course, a nice crowd Saturday night then for the Charlie Manuel ceremony. But, yeah, it was a fun night. A good bit of Mets fans in the park, I guess not surprisingly. A lot of them came down for that ball game. Phillies got down 5-1. They've been down a lot of games lately, but they did come back, make it exciting, 5-4 in the ninth inning. But yet another loss, and that's 0-2 for me there this season. And if I'm not mistaken, 2-9 the Phillies are in games that I've attended over the last 2 years. So they definitely want to keep me away from Citizens Bank Park.
Well, I'm ahead of you. I've only been able to make it there one time this year, and they are 1-0.
Wow. You should get there more often then, Bill.
That's right. Not many people can say that at this point, I don't think. Well, our www.shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. And as I mentioned earlier, we'd like to especially hear from anyone that attended the Alumni Day practice at Franklin Field. As always, we do ask that all language be professional. All opinions are welcome. But please be respectful of other people's opinions. again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, please contact the Philly Press Box Facebook page, leave a message, and we'll do our best to get your message, comment, or question on the show. All right, Chet, let's talk about some Eagles. Let's start out a little bit with last week's game against the Bears. I know you taped it. I got to watch it. Obviously, we know the preseason doesn't mean a whole lot from the scoreboard standpoint, but I'd like to get your take on what you saw in the opener, and let's talk about the positives first.
Yeah, I got home about 11:45 Friday night and immediately put the Eagles game on. I had DVR'd the game, of course. Let's see. Zach Ertz looks pretty good. As I said before, the second-year tight end should have a breakout year. He'll probably unseat Brent Celek as the number one guy there. The rookie Marcus Smith showed that he's got some ability. They'll be cautious with him this year, I think, but he's certainly got potential. And I guess the real highlight was Mark Sanchez. He looked terrific, and he very quickly eased a lot of worries about the Birds' backup quarterback situation. So they were definitely some of the positives right there. Ertz, Marcus Smith, and Mark Sanchez, and I'm probably overlooking a few others. I took a bunch of notes as I was watching, and I set them aside, and then I somehow misplaced them. So I'm doing it all from memory now, which is scary.
Okay. Well, I guess from my viewpoint, first and most important is there were no serious injuries that I'm aware of. I did have Zach Ertz as well, with four catches for 60 yards in the game. And if nothing else, you know, obviously there were a whole bunch of players playing, but he definitely looked like he was going to be a target in the offense. So that's a good sign. Matthew Tucker, who may end up being a practice squad guy. I don't know where he's going to fit, but they sure, you know, they were giving him some work, giving him a look. He had 8 carries for 40 yards and scored the 2 touchdowns. So he looked pretty good. Interestingly enough, 15 different guys caught passes for the Eagles in that game. I don't know if that's good or bad because they won't have them all around, but they were spreading the ball around. Now, I guess my real highlight had to be Josh Huff's kick return. And, you know, there was a gaping hole, obviously, and but Josh Huff showed some serious speed. And the last positive I had, which you notice I haven't said too much about the defense, but the defense did have 3 turnovers.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Huff. I mean, everybody was raving about him and that we finally have a kickoff returner. Yeah, that was a great return, but, I mean, let's face it, that hole was huge. You or I think, could have ran through that one and, you know, made some decent yardage. His other returns weren't quite that good, but yeah, he does have some good speed, certainly, and, you know, if they do have a threat now on kickoff returns, that would be great because you have Sproles, too, now on the punt return. So special teams, I think, is going to be something to watch this year. They definitely wanted to improve that, and I think they have with Huff returning kicks, Sproles available for punt returns, and they got some good coverage also out of Huff and some of the other guys too. So, you know, hopefully improving the special teams will be something that we will see this year. Of course, one other thing that we do want to see is Alex Henry getting some deeper balls as far as when he's kicking off. I didn't pay much attention to that on Friday night, but that's something we definitely have to see because they gave opponents some good field position last year, and not just in the New Orleans playoff game, but in much of the regular season games as well. So definitely want to see lots of improvement on special teams this year.
Well, I wanted to ask you, before we get over to the negative side, you know, I posted on our Philly Press Box Facebook page, you know, about if the team were to go 8-8 and if they were able to make a wild card, would that be a successful season or not? And boy, there was a ton of comments and about that. And along with that, and I did not post it, but I saw it everywhere, a lot of people just jumping all over Nick Foles right out of the chute. What's your thoughts on those two things?
All right, well, first of all, 8-8 is not going to get you a playoff spot in the NFC East, unless you are the division champion at 8-8. You're not going to get a wild card spot at 8-8, so forget about that. But on the other hand, I think 9-7 could win that division because, as we've discussed previously, I think Dallas is going to be pretty bad this year. Washington will be improved, but still probably only a 500 at best team. The Giants are the one team that I might be a little concerned about. But, yeah, 9-7 could win that division, and I'm still thinking it's going to be the Eagles with either those 9 or 10 wins that we discussed previously. As far as Nick Foles, I don't get it. Why are so many fans all of a sudden jumping off the Nick bandwagon? The guy played 3 series in the preseason opener. Yeah, he threw 2 picks, not a great performance, certainly, but it was the preseason opener, for crying out loud. He's working with some new receivers. It's the first game against an opponent. The timing's not there yet, obviously, so relax, everybody. Look at what he did last year. He should be better this year. I mean, his numbers aren't going to be better. They're not going to possibly be better than 27 touchdowns and 2 picks from last year, 119 passer rating. But just as far as making decisions and all that, that's going to come. I mean, it was one preseason game. Give the guy time. I mean, if he's doing this in the second and third preseason game and, you know, the season opener against Jacksonville, then we'll talk. But really, come on, give the guy a break. I think he deserves a little more respect and a little more time than we're giving him here.
I agree. And, you know, one thing that I read this week that I thought was really interesting, to your point about the NFC East, the I believe it was on SI.com, I want to say, or maybe it was on ESPN.com, but one of the national writers was talking about the NFC East, and he says that every team in that league, in that division, is improved. His one team that he did not think was much improved was the Eagles. He still picked the Eagles to win, but his point was he feels like the Dallas offense, you know, you and I have both been kind of kicking Dallas around, that the Dallas offense, with the offensive line that they've got and that they've drafted 3 number ones in the last 3 years, they have Dez Bryant, who is without a doubt a weapon. He's a good player. That the Dallas offense is going to score a whole bunch of points. Of course, he did say
they're
the Dallas
have to.
Defense is going to give up a whole lot of points.
Yep.
With losing DeMarcus Ware and Sean Lee and some others. So, but I thought that was interesting. The article also stated that the Giants in their new offense have to be better. Anything has to be better for Eli Manning because he had such a poor season that he will be nothing but better, and the Giants will be better accordingly. And, of course, you know, with the addition of DeSean Jackson and the expected improvement of Robert Griffin III, you know, that the Redskins are going to be better. So I thought it was an interesting look from the outside for somebody who's not, you know, not a Philadelphia writer.
Well, overall, I think the Eagles are going to be about the same. That's why I'm saying they're going to be about 10-6, but I think the defense is going to be better. Much of the rest of the team will be about the same. But, yeah, I agree that the Redskins should be better. The Giants, I think, will certainly be better than last year. We've talked about that, too, that they frequently bounce back after a down year. But I don't agree with that writer that the Cowboys are better. Yeah, they may be better offensively, but that defense is just a mess. My one advice to anybody who maybe likes to lay a little money on games, go with the Cowboys game and bet the over.
Yeah. that should be safe, I think.
There you go.
Well, I wanted to hit the negatives of this game, and I wanted to throw something out because you've already touched on it with Nick Foles. And I said this to you several weeks ago on our show, and I unfortunately I saw a lot of what I didn't want to see the other night. The offensive line struggled, and you know they've got to keep pressure off of Foles. Both of those passes he threw for interceptions were behind the receivers, but they were because he had guys in his face. And as we discussed before, you know, my thinking is, you know, with all the weapons that they have, they're going to be blitzing people from everywhere, and Foles is going to get hit, and they're just going to have to do a better job in pass protection. And you know, again, it's one quarter basically for the first unit, or maybe two, of the first preseason game. So nothing to get too excited about, but they just cannot allow Nick Foles to get pressure in his face all year long.
I can't disagree. I mean, the offensive line is a key this year. We've talked previously about the fact that they're all getting older. They're not going to play the 97% or whatever it was of the snaps that they played last year. We know that. Lane Johnson's already out with the suspension for 4 games. There's probably going to be a couple of nagging injuries here and there. Remember, 2 years ago, their offensive line, I think 4/5 of the line, went down and was out injured. Last year, they stayed very healthy. Both of those are kind of extreme. Typically, you're going to have, you know, a couple of injuries here and there, and that's what I expect this year. So, you know, having some good backups like Barber or Barbary, however you want to pronounce it, Dennis Kelly, they got to be able to step in and do a decent job when those guys do go down, if they're injured or suspended or whatever. Because, as you said, protecting Foles is a key. He's a smart guy. I think he will improve on his decision-making, but I mean, if he's getting rushed and blitzed all the time, that's going to take a toll on you for sure.
A couple of the other things that I had jotted down from the negative standpoint is, you know, some are just basic football things, and it doesn't matter if your starters are playing or your last guys are playing. 9 penalties for 89 yards and 4 turnovers. It doesn't matter if you're playing flag football out in the neighborhood, you know, running routes between cars like we used to. You can't play the game and win the game that way.
Yeah, penalties were definitely a concern. And speaking of which, how about the referees? I mean, after every time they flew a flag, they all had to get together and decide, you know, exactly what they were going to call. That was kind of agonizing as well. I mean, that game seemed like it took a long time. Thank God I had the fast forward button. I was able to speed through some of that. But every time they threw a flag, instead of just the referee then going and announcing the penalty, he had to talk with the other guys and decide exactly what they were calling. I guess that was his first game, if I understood it, as a referee. He got promoted this year. But there are also some rules changes this year, and they're trying to protect the wide receivers, I guess, a little more, so making it even tougher than in past years on defensive backs as far as what they can do with the clutching and grabbing. But I think it was the great Ray Didinger who I heard on the radio the other day saying he had a good line, something about watching the referees after every time they threw a flag. It was almost as agonizing as watching Kyle Kendrick pitch an inning.
Nice. Well, I tell you, I was disturbed by the roughing the quarterback call. And I don't even remember who on the Eagles that was called against. But I'm thinking to myself, here we go. Same old stuff as last year. There was nowhere near the quarterback's head. It was a football play. It was just a regular play. He beat his guy. He made a play. He hit the quarterback. And they throw a flag. It's just, I was really hoping that they would clean that up from last year, the referees, not the league, not the players. Because the players are in a position, you can't hit them below the waist, you can't hit them above the breastbone. You know, you got about a 1 foot spot to hit them.
It's gotten ridiculous. I mean, over the last several years, they've just really made it so tough on the defenses. I realize you want to keep the quarterbacks especially healthy. You want to make sure the guys aren't suffering concussions, but I mean, when these guys are moving as fast as they can, it's impossible to, you know, shift your body when you're flying at 40 miles an hour or whatever. It's just really tough, and I think they're too quick to throw a flag a lot of the times when it concerns plays like you were just talking about.
Yeah, a couple other points that, first of all, I'm going to give Jordan Matthews a pass on
his
three drops. It's a little disturbing, you know, but I mean, it didn't matter who was throwing them, he was dropping them. So I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass for his first go-round, but I'm not happy about that. My other couple things, and then we'll hit yours, is the time of possession. It always was a factor last year, even in this game. And it's not necessarily – it's not the plays, it's the play calling, it's the situations that they're in. The Bears had the ball for 36-54. And the Eagles just 23-06. Unless you're scoring all the time, that's going to put the pressure back on the defense. And the Eagles allowed 491 yards in this game to the Bears. And, you know, if you look at it as being relative, why our thirds are in, their thirds are in, why our seconds are in, their seconds are in, you know. So, you know, but 500 yards in offense is just too much. And the last point defensively, the Bears scored 7 in the first, 7 in the second, 17 in the third, and 3 in the fourth. So it didn't matter who we ran out there, they scored points on us. That's still a little troubling.
Yeah, I agree with you on the time of possession thing. I mean, that's one of the downsides of this fast-paced motion offense that Chip Kelly runs. You know, it's a quick strike kind of thing, but then you're going to have the defense not getting a whole lot of rest, and a lot of times that is going to put a lot of wear and tear on them and sometimes result in more points than you'd like to see. So that's one of those catch-22 situations. I think we're going to have to live with it, though. Obviously, we did last year, and we're probably going to have to do it again. I want to get back to Jordan Matthews, though. Yeah, not a great debut for the rookie. He caught 4 passes, but they were all minimal gains. And, yes, the big reason for the concern, he had those 3 drops, a couple of them, you know, pretty easy ones that he definitely should have caught. The drops are what scared off some GMs and others at the Combine and the Senior Bowl, I believe. But I still like the guy. It was a preseason opener again. Give this guy a chance. He's obviously got lots of talent, seems to be a bright guy. I think he'll, you know, make the corrections, and otherwise he's got good hands from what we understand. So let's not make any rush to judgment on Jordan Matthews. I like the guy. I think he's going to be a real good slot receiver. I think he's going to get a lot of action in his rookie year. So let's give him a couple of games before we certainly write him off. Give Jordan Matthews a chance.
I'm with you. As I said, I gave him a pass as well. Okay, let's tell me, I was only able to kind of read up on this, so I didn't get to see the news or hear the news, but tell me what you know about the Alumni Day at Franklin Field. It looked like a really cool deal, and that everybody was bought in. The current players, the alumni players, the fans, I believe there were 26,000 there. What did you find out about that?
Yeah, a lot of our friends on Facebook apparently made it out there, posted some pictures, which was great to see. It looked like a great event. I wish I could have been there for that. I hope they do this every year. I haven't heard any kind of an announcement, but, man, I would love to see them make this an annual event, having that final open practice at Franklin Field. And, by the way, what a great weekend it was for that sort of thing, because it was also, of course, alumni weekend at Citizens Bank Park where the Phillies played. They honored Charlie Manuel on Saturday night. As we talked earlier, Roy Halladay was in town, a bunch of the other Phillies legends, other Wall of Famers, Carlton, Schmidt, et cetera. So, yeah, having it finish with the Eagles practicing at Franklin Field on Sunday, it just looked like a great event. I got to give the Eagles a lot of credit for doing this and for bringing back so many of their legends. You know, Bill Berge and, of course, Chuck Bednarik, which was, you know, a real highlight for a lot of people. Tommy McDonald, who still looks like he's in real good shape despite his age. So I'm glad that a lot of our friends and people that we know got out to see it. It looked like a great event, and it seemed like a lot of the current Eagles really had a lot of respect for these older guys, too. You know, I read up on things like Connor Barwin and Michael Kendricks and some of the other guys just really, really admiring what the Eagles did here and the fact that so many of these ex-Eagles and so many legends were able to come out on this day and just to enjoy seeing what the fans thought of all these guys who played in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. So a great event. Loved seeing all the pictures. Thank you, everyone on Facebook, for posting them. And, man, if they do it again, I think they will, I would love to get there next year.
Yeah, I love the picture that was out there of my buddy Kevin Riley, who I've known for a long time, and my favorite Eagle of all time, Bill Berge. And they were teammates together, and what a great picture. Love those guys.
Yeah, I met Berge a couple of times, a great guy, and you know Kevin, so that was a nice picture. I think they were with Chip Kelly in the picture, too, so that was really nice, and that really looked like a great time.
Yep, it did. Well, listen, we have a caller, Chet. Let's bring him on. Let's see what we got right quick. Welcome
Hello,
to the Philly Press Box Radio.
Hello, Philly Press Box and Jim Chesko. I heard
Hello,
there was an
Mark.
Opening... Yes, I heard there was an opening for a sideline reporter from Franklin Field tonight. So,
you go ahead, lay it on us right quick.
Yeah, I'd like to share it. It was a real honor and thrill. Probably the best time I've had in an Eagle event since I was at the 1981 Eagles championship game, freezing my butt off in the 700 level of the event at that point. It was everything that you can imagine. And that picture that you were just talking about, I shared with you. Kevin had shared it with me. I was at with my 10-year-old grandson, and we were at the 45-yard line, and we got some great shots. My daughter is processing now. I'm not techno-swabby like you guys, you know, to that point. So as soon as I get them into the computer, you'll have a lot to be shared and be able to see a lot there in that album, and you can make your comments and enjoy. The one big surprise for me was seeing my old friend Chuck Bednarik coming out with a walker. Was kind of amazing. People don't realize Chuck is close to 90 years old now, and he still lives up in Bethlehem. And the thing I noticed, I think as you go and you see some of these pictures, at the end, every one of these players lined up and were patting high fives to all the vet connection was there, was Chip Kelly made sure he shook the hand of every veteran at the very end of that line. And he has the idea what the history of the Eagles is all about. He earned the respect of those veterans, and he earned the respect of his team. So it was a really great, fantastic event. I wholly endorse them doing it as an annual event. I never dreamed that when I was 8 years old, my grandfather introduced me to a lineman named Jess Richardson. And I was at a Crane's restaurant in Philadelphia, guys, and he bought me a Birch beer, and I teased everybody. I became an Eagle fan as a cheap date, you know, and I was able to take history with my 10-year-old grandson and go back to the same spot where we won that last championship, where I had a chance to go with my grandfather. So it was a bucket list type of day for me, very special. One other thing I'd like to leave with you guys, two things real quick. If you will discuss the wide receiver situation down the road, I did see a scenario that people have talked about. We've lost a boy with DeSean Jackson, and because Riley Cooper, you know, may not be as good this year in production because of DeSean's speed. What I did notice in the practice an awful lot was the slot role for McCoy and Sproles being split up. And the fact that they're using both of them as occasional wideouts, I think that compensates a lot for that scenario. That's going to open up a lot of offense for this team. I actually think Darren Sproles will be better in the chip system than he was in New Orleans. And the last but not least, a little shout-out for Robin Williams. I know it's non-sports related, but it is in one way because Andre Walters years ago passed away from a similar situation and from the gangrene defense. It's a situation where here was a guy that influenced and a lot of people with his making people laugh at almost everything, and a genius like that, and then suffered from a private setting for himself. I hope we get educated more and learn more from this on that. So have a great night. Discuss the wideout situation. I'd like to hear your comments on that. I think we have a potential there, but it might be worth looking at somebody, adding a veteran down the line, especially with Macklin's history of having some injuries. Again, another tweak today. So let's keep our fingers crossed. All right,
Mark,
guys,
Mark,
as usual.
Hey, Mark,
ahead,
I wanted to ask you, while you were at practice, did you happen to see McCoy and Sproles on the field together at all?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
yes,
that's kind of what I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it looks dangerous. Quite frankly, it looks dangerous. When they signed Darren Sproles, I said point blank that that was going to be an exciting thing for this team, really exciting team. He might be the missing link that we needed all along because it's perfect. It's ideal for him. And this kid rookie, Henry Josie, I don't know if he's going to, if he makes a practice squad, I'm pulling for him. It's a great story there. But he's a sprawl size, and those type of players in Chip's system are very impressive, very impressive. It was very interesting to watch this in person, how they laid it out. I was up in Lehigh in 2009 and got to see, this is only the second training facility I've been able to go to, and watching this, how they work, Chip systems was working. He was going at the pace that they do in a game, and it was pretty fantastic. These guys are in great shape, and it was really my grandson. He was thrilled to death, especially when they went on the 11-11 drills. You know, to that point, then you really got to see a lot of stuff that was appreciated. But yeah, I do hope they do this at Franklin every year. I did have the honor to meet Ray Dittinger and Ruben Franks, and I met Nate Allen and a few others, and Ray Dittinger is another bucket list thing for me, and that was a timing thing. I had my Chuck Greinerich jersey on. He said, wow, I haven't seen anything like that, and we started talking for a few minutes. Genuine nice guy. And it was really a day to enjoy. A fabulous day to enjoy. And if they do have it next year, well, I waited 3 hours on the computer to try to get tickets, and it was all worth it. It was about $28,000. And I found out, I think the last time I talked to you, why they don't have an exhibition game is they don't have the bathroom facilities upstairs at Franklin Field. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that explains why they don't have a game there, because I'd love to see an exhibition game there.
Okay.
The field is in excellent shape, and like I said, the picture's forthcoming. I will be sharing with both of you and my Facebook friends, and I hope you all enjoy. And it was quite an experience. So as your sideline Franklin Field reporter, which is a rare job today, I hope to give you a little bit of sense of what happened there. All right, Mark.
We sure appreciate it. Thanks for the update. Thanks for calling.
No problem. It's always a pleasure to talk with both of you guys, and keep up the good work. Enjoy the show.
All right, pleasure,
guys.
Mark.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
All right.
All right, plenty to discuss, Bill. Let me first say, as far as Ray Dittinger, I've had the pleasure of meeting Ray about four times. He is one of the nicest guys in sports media and just one of the nicest people I've ever met. He always gives you, you know, the time of day. He cares about what you're saying to him. He doesn't just, you know, brush you off. Ray Diddy, great guy. That's first. Second of all, Eagles wide receivers, lunchtime today, I heard the news that, you know, there were tweets that Macklin just caught a great touchdown pass from Foles in these drills with the Patriots. And then the next tweet was, uh-oh, he's leaving the field because he apparently tweaked something. So turns out he did a little hamstring tweak or whatever today. They removed him from the practice as a precaution, but nothing too serious, they say. But still, it's a concern. I mean, the guy missed all of last season. You worry about him. And we don't know if he's going to play Friday. He's hopeful that he can play Friday night against the Patriots. We don't know for sure as yet. It's only Wednesday. But, I mean, if Macklin goes down again for any length of time, that is a major problem because, as I guess Mark was alluding to, they don't have a whole lot of depth there. With Deshaun gone and Jason Avant gone, I mean, now it's up to Macklin and Cooper and then all these young guys to carry the load. We don't know a whole lot about Brad Smith. We don't know for sure if Jordan Matthews is ready for that as a rookie. They got this other guy, what's his name, Moma,
yeah.
Out there now. But I mean, if Macklin goes down, boy, they don't have a lot of depth at all. And you know, Cooper is then your number one guy, which I mean, he's a great second or more so third receiver, I think. He benefited last year from the fact that Jackson was getting a lot of double teams. I'm scared. I hope Macklin can stay healthy, because if he's not healthy, the depth of wide receiver is not there, and I agree with Mark. That's a definite concern, and maybe they should look into go out and getting someone who's got a little more experience than what they have currently on the roster.
I could not agree more. I thought it was interesting all along that the Eagles were testing out that knee anyway. I want to say Macklin is still on a one-year deal. They didn't commit to him. He's got injury problems, and you know it doesn't take much in that league. You don't have to blow a body part out. You can you tweak a hamstring, you do something, whatever it is that sets you back. You know, is critical in that league, and I agree with you 100%. I just hope that he's able to play, because to me he's the number one. He's the guy that's got to have the big season for them.
Yep. I mean, it's a good thing they did acquire Sproles. They can put him out in the slot, I guess, use him as a receiver as well as a running back. But I'm worried. I hope Macklin does stay healthy, because he is a huge key to that offense this year. So stay healthy, Jeremy.
Okay, well, let's take a break right quick. We've got a caller coming up after the break, and we'll jump on that, all right? Let's take a second, thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Okay, Chet, let's jump on this call and see what we got. Welcome
to
the show.
Bill and Chet, it's Steve Swickowitz calling from the Willow Grove, Pennsylvania area.
Swift, how are you?
Yeah, Chet knows that Chet and I go way back. He knows me by Swift, so you can call me Swift. So that'll be fine.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Great show. I caught about the last 15, 20 minutes of it. And great Eagles talk. And Chet will tell you I'm not an Eagles fan. I grew up a Steeler fan, so I try to keep things pretty even keel when it comes to the Eagles, looking at them somewhat, without the rose-colored glasses on, if you will. And Chet, I will not make a prediction, as you have a tendency to get a bit annoyed with my predictions of 12 or 13 wins in a Super Bowl appearance every year.
Exactly.
But, I caught quite a bit of that Chicago Bear game the other night. And one thing is, reading on Twitter and publications and hearing on the radio, a lot of those penalties that they would not have been called in the regular season. That was, I think, a learning in progress for a lot of those referees, and they probably would have put the whistle away or the flag away in this case if this was a regular season game. So I wouldn't really take too much out of that. From a performance standpoint, hold, again, as you said, Chet, in the early part of the show, probably wouldn't get too worked up about it, but it's going to be hard for him to repeat his numbers from last year, and especially no DeSean Jackson. And, you know, how much can you really count on Macklin? And is Riley Cooper going to repeat his numbers from last year? So these are all things to take into consideration. If I was an Eagle fan, I'd be kind of concerned about the wide receiver position right now. Even if Macklin is healthy, they still got some issues there. They could say whatever they want about DeSean Jackson. They didn't miss that offense and the big play capability. I don't think they have that wide receiver on the roster right now.
Hey, Swit, do you think the Eagles' defense will be better this year than last year?
That's a good question. I don't think they could be any worse. I think they made some upgrades. I don't know how much you're going to get out of Marcus Smith. I wouldn't count on too much. It doesn't sound like they're counting on too much. The secondary, and you made a good point, if they're going to run this pedal-to-the-metal, high-octane offense most of the time, it's not going to give the defense much time to get a blow on the sidelines. So I would hope they could be better from an Eagles fan standpoint. I don't know how they could be any worse, but time will tell. They haven't really made any other than – I don't think they made any significant changes on defense in the offseason. You know, and that's considering their first-round draft pick and they signed Nolan Carroll and someone else that's
Jenkins.
Yeah, we haven't seen enough of them, and it's going to take some time for those guys anyway to gel, but we'll see. We'll have to see what happens from the defensive side of things.
How are your Steelers going to do this year?
You know what, Chet? I really haven't even begun to look into that too much with them. I talked to a good friend of mine who lives in the Pittsburgh area, so I really can't even speak on the Steelers. They are getting old. I know they made some good improvements on defense. They drafted a guy named Ryan Shazier in the first round. They expect big things out of him. He's an outside linebacker, blitzer-type guy. So I know that he's had a good camp, expecting big things out of him. So, you know, we'll see. From afar, I don't see them on TV that often. I watch the majority of the Eagles. So, you know, I follow them actually more than I follow the Steelers.
And, Bill, I'll mention that I worked with Swit at Bloomberg, I guess, for the main part of our time together. But he also worked for the Sports Network and still does for many years. And he has covered the Flyers quite a bit over the years. So while we have you on the line, Swit, what did you think of the Hextall move, and what's your prognostication for the Flyers going forward?
Yeah, good question. Well, something had to be done. Holmgren, obviously, without candy coating it, he made a mess out of the roster. I believe the Letellier contract, I know fans were excited about it at first. When I saw 4 years and I believe he got $22 million overall, I couldn't believe it. I mean, for a 35-year-old player who is obviously on the downside of his career, I didn't get that. Not only that, he goes out and signs Mark Streit. He's in his mid-30s, four-year guaranteed contract. And they signed Andrew McDonald, another defenseman, $5 million a year contract, I believe for 4 or 5 years. You can't keep doing that kind of stuff. And I actually heard, believe it was Glenn Mack now, I believe on the radio, saying that Hexie's number one job this year is going to be to clean up Holmgren's mess, try to get rid of the Le Cavalier contract, which, from what I understand, it's going to be an awful tough task to do. Apparently, rumor had it that they had a deal in place with Nashville to unload him. I don't know what they were going to get back in return for him, but Nashville backed out, didn't want any part of it. So we'll see if they can move that contract in the offseason. I think they're a borderline playoff team. I think some way they do get in, but I wouldn't expect much when they get in there. So we'll have to see. The Scott Hartnell trade for R.J. Umberger, I was never a real big R.J. Umberger fan when he was here the first time. That said, Hartnell was, I think he's on the downside of his career. He takes too many stupid penalties and puts the team, as they say in hockey, behind the eight ball a lot of times. But as far as Umberger goes, I know he had his issues in Columbus where he was benched at the latter part of the season. So, you know, I don't know. I think that trade, at best, it's a wash. I think you're going to lose a lot of offensive power from Hartnell that Umberger is not going to give you. So, again, we'll see in the Flyers, but, again, a borderline playoff team.
All right, Swit. Thanks for that analysis.
Right. Thanks for the call, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Great show.
All right, Swit. Take care.
Thanks.
Yep, take care.
Well, Chet, let's move along right quick. I wanted to get in here the Philly Press Box Radio audio clip of the week. It's a little longer than normal, and the players aren't really the guys we want to talk about, but this is the kind of excitement I think we want to hear coming out of Lincoln Financial Field.
14 seconds to go. 31-31. Matt dodged the punt. Gets a high snap. Gets it away. It's a knuckle. Jackson takes it at the 35. Picks it up. Looks for running room. He's at the 40. He's at the 45. And the Giants fans can't believe it, and the Eagles have just pulled off the most remarkable win I have ever seen.
You know, when the downside of the NFL is you get all these national broadcasters, and unless you're really diehard fans, you don't put your radio on while you're watching a football game, and people miss calls like that coming from local guys like Merrill Reese. That just fantastic.
Yeah, that is great. I love hearing Merrill on those kind of things. And, yeah, it was DeSean Jackson, but, man, that was an exciting play, an exciting win. And, boy, how many times have the Eagles beat the Giants in the closing seconds in dramatic fashion over the years? How many miracles have come our way instead of the Giants' way when we've played one another? That's amazing.
Well, I've got three that I count in my lifetime. The Herm Edwards, the Brian Westbrook, and the DeSean Jackson are my three.
Yeah. Yeah. There was the other one, the blocked field goal also, that I guess it was Clyde Simmons ran back for a touchdown.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
So it's four. Crazy.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's slide over, get to our next section here as we're running out of time. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the Phillies.
Why, Bill?
Well, because there's just some news out there that needs to be talked about. And I'm going to ask you, Jim Chesko, you are in the Ruben Amaro Jr. hot seat. And I want to ask you, where do you start to blow this up, and are you willing to trade Cole Hamels to add players now? Now, why you're pondering that, I want to throw at you the statistics that I posted the other night for our listeners. Since June the 1st, Cole Hamels has had 14 starts and given up 16 earned runs in 99 and two-thirds innings. That's ridiculous. For a 1.44 ERA, and during that time, due to the miserable offense that's around him, he's won five, lost three, and had six no decisions. And in those 26 starts this season, the whole entire season, he's only given up more than three runs three times, and two of those were in like the first five outings. And he's pitched at least seven innings in 15 of his last 17 starts. Are you willing to part with that guy to get some promising young players who are struggling at the plate with the Boston Red Sox?
I've gone back and forth on this with myself for the past 3 weeks. I mean, Hamels, you put out the numbers. His ERA for the season is 2.37. It's 1.44, I think you said, over the last 14 or 15 starts. I don't want to see him go. But at the same time, I know they've got to pretty much blow this up. So I would be willing to trade him if it's a blockbuster deal, and if we are getting the kind of prospects that we're talking about. I mean, if it's a deal with Boston, it's got to be some of their top prospects, the Xander Bogaerts or outfielder Jackie Bradley Jr., I guess is another name that they've put out there. It's got to be some top-quality guys who are – I mean, there's no such thing as a can't-miss prospect, I guess, anymore. Dominic Brown has proven that. But, I mean, you got to be getting guys who are pretty close to ready to play in the major leagues and who are going to be near certain starters. I don't want to see Hamels go, but, I mean, this may be the time to do it. So I'm kind of saying, yeah, it's okay to do it, but I'm really having a heavy heart over it because I like Cole Hamels so much. I love seeing him pitch, especially the way he's pitched over the last 3 months.
Well, the thing about the guys you mentioned, I think Bogaerts is like 20 years old, and Bradley is only like 22. And there's also a catcher, Christian Vasquez, that's been tossed around too, who's another real young guy. Now, you know, the downside to those guys, or I guess the upside, is at Triple-A and throughout the minor leagues, they have just dominated. But now they've gotten to the big leagues, and it's a whole different game, you know. Bogaerts, I think, is hitting .230 in the big leagues. Bradley is not doing much better. Bradley's a center fielder. I mean, and there's all these pros and cons about Ben Revere, but Ben Revere's hitting .308. You know, is that your biggest weakness? Are you ready? And then are you ready to say, okay, Chooch, we've had enough, and even though we signed you to a three-year contract, let's bring this other guy in. Yeah, I think if you're going to trade Hamels, you better be bringing two or three guys that are going to step into your lineup and play every day and play right now.
Oh, I agree. Bogaerts is 21. Bradley is 24, by the way. There seems to be something to this based on the reports that the Eagles have been scouting Boston for the last several weeks really closely, really heavily. So it sounds like there is some smoke here. Maybe it'll lead to a fire. I don't know. But, boy, I really would love to somehow see them keep Hamels and build around him again, but I know it's probably not the right thing to do. So it's time. You got to start making some changes because this roster is just not good enough to compete. They're just too old as far as the everyday players. So it's time to start making those moves, Ruben.
Well, and with that said, you know, if you unload your ace, who is pretty much with Cliff Lee hurt, is about the only consistent pitcher that you have, then where do you start? You know, Lee's not going to be around long either, and now you're starting to really get thin on the hill. So, you know, it's kind of the chicken or the egg game, I think.
You know, it's funny because at the beginning of this year, we looked at their starting pitching as a major strength. You had Hamels, you had Cliff Lee, two bona fide aces, and then you had A.J. Burnett, who, yeah, at 37 or 38, he's not the pitcher that he used to be, but still a pretty good double-digit winner. But look where they are this year. We're talking about two guys who have six wins apiece, no fault of Hamels, of course. You got Lee, who's out for the year now, back on the disabled list, and a lot of question marks moving forward. And by the way, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and somebody, I think it was Mark or one of the other guys mentioned on Facebook that this might be a year where the Phillies don't have a starting pitcher or any pitcher with double-digit victories, because right now they have three guys with six wins. You got Buchanan, you got Hamels. Who else? I don't know. Six
Burnett.
Wins apiece. Burnett, yeah. So they're on pace for like 8.25 wins at this time. The last time the Phillies had a roster that did not have a double-digit winner was 1996. That was Curt Schilling was 9-10. He was their leading winner in 1996, and then Terry Mulholland had 8 wins in 96. So it's been 18 years. It happened 5 times previously in the 1900s, but they are in serious jeopardy of another year without a double-digit winning pitcher.
Well, since we mentioned this Xander Bogaerts, he's a shortstop. That leads me to Jimmy Rollins, hitting .237, 15 home runs, 49 RBIs, and he has a $11 million vesting option for 2015 if he reaches 600 plate appearances in 2014, or 1,100 at-bats in 2013-14 combined.
And where does he stand on that?
He is going to get the 600, I think. I mean, he's playing every day. I can't see how he would miss that. So, you know, I guess if you see him get benched, they're going to make a move. Or otherwise, I guess Jimmy Rollins at hitting .237 and just not getting it done, still great defensively, is going to be here in 2015.
Yeah, it looks that way. I mean, the one positive is his power numbers came back a bit this year, the 15 homers and more ribbies. He's also stolen a few more bases than I think he has in recent years. The defense is still good, but he's got to get on base more. That average just keeps sinking and sinking. It was close to .250. Then it was in the .240s for the longest time. Now he's down to .237. So it's a concern. I mean, yeah, he's not a kid anymore, so maybe he's just getting a little tired here in August, especially when the team's not doing all that well. But I mean, the whole core is so old now. You got Ruiz, you got Utley, you got Rollins, and of course you got Howard. We've talked about this ad nauseum all season. These guys are old and just not as good as they used to be. So they're not going to get younger or better in the coming years. So it's time to move on. So if you're listening, Ruben, and I think you might be, make some moves, please.
I think he probably is. If he's not, he should be.
That's right.
All right. Well, hey, we're getting close to the top of the hour. Did want to let our listeners know that we will have Trenton Times Eagles beat writer Mark Eckel making a return appearance with us next Wednesday night. And we had a great time with him the last time, Chet, and Mark does a great job. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll be getting his Eagles insight, and he'll be back in the Chet rapid-fire hot seat as well. I'm sure he's aware of that, so he's probably studying up already.
Well, he better be. He better be, because I'm a little worried about what it might be like second time around. All right, well, the area completed some big signings last week at Carl's Cards and the Popple Show with MJR Sports Collectibles. Were both very popular with the fans. A lot of good autographed guests, and a lot of fans came out to see those guys. It was great. And MJR will be having Flyers winger Matt Reed at Pro Image in Willow Grove on September 5th from 7 to 8:30. Darren Sproles is scheduled to be at the Sports Cave on September 9th from 1:30 to 2:45. For those that aren't familiar with them, they're located at 1625 Chestnut Street in town. And they're in the Liberty Mall, and they do accept mail orders as well. Although it's quite a bit out there, our buddy Carl Henderson at Carl's Cards has announced that he will be having John LeClair in his Havertown store and a private signing with the Big E, Eric Lindros. Both will be in November. So find your items to get signed. For me, I'm looking for a Lindros stick this time around. So we'll see if we can find one. These guys do a great job getting guests in, and we hope that you can support them.
I met Matt Reed 2 years ago. Super nice guy, and I'm sure that the LeClair, Lindros, and Sproles signings will all generate plenty of interest. A lot of good stuff coming up.
Yes, there is. And these guys all have Facebook pages, websites. It's Carl's Cards, MJR Sports Collectibles, and the Sports Cave. Well, partner, any parting words for the week as we head into week two of the preseason?
Well, not that anybody cares about my weekend plans, but I'm looking forward to a couple of events on my schedule this weekend, Bill. I'll be making my twice-yearly visit to the Monster Mania Convention Friday evening at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Cherry Hill. Guests this time around include TV's Batman and Robin, Adam West and Burt Ward, a bunch of cast members from The Walking Dead, which, by the way, is one of my favorite TV shows, plus the legendary Rowdy Roddy Piper and some other wrestling legends will be there. Then on Saturday, my wife and I are headed to Broadway to see the Rocky musical the day before it closes. Yep, Rocky on Broadway. So
wow.
Just like last weekend, Bill, I'll be DVRing the Eagles preseason game Friday night and watching it at midnight or so. Let's hope, most of all, they come out of it healthy. That's the key thing this week against New England.
Well, it sounds like you've got a busy weekend ahead of you. You might have to go back to work Monday and get some rest.
Oh, I'm telling you. Oh, one other thing. Mark mentioned Robin Williams. That's another thing, not sports-related, but very, very sad. That really hit me hard Monday night because, I mean, Robin Williams is just such a great comedian and so many great movies. I tried to come up with a list of, like, my five favorite Robin Williams movies, and it was very difficult, but, you know, definitely Awakenings is on the list. And I loved Good Morning Vietnam. And the Matt Damon one, of course, for which he won the Oscar also, the name of which suddenly escapes me. But great actor, great performer, and just a sad ending to his story. But he'll be certainly very much missed, Robin Williams.
Oh, can't agree more. Fantastic, fantastic talent. All right. One other announcement that we'd just like to make as a reminder. We will be live from the Buckets Tavern and Tap with the Philly of the South folks down here in Tampa on September the 7th at noon. That is leading up to the Eagles opener. So Chet will be on the phone. I will be live at the location and really looking forward to it, meeting a whole bunch of new Eagles fans and having a great time with it. So plan on joining us for that. We'd like to thank Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, as well as our sponsor, www.shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, August 20th at 7 p.m., along with Mark Eckel, to talk all things Philly sports. You can listen through our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio.